From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows. Hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and well, alongside of me this week, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever non-dying, and ever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob, and of course, great to be back here with you here on Bob After Dark. I was warming up the crowd for you there, Bob, on the radio side of things. So.
What were you doing to warm them up there?
You know, I was just telling jokes, you know, getting them warmed up there before you stopped in. But as the old show business saying goes, the show must go on.
The show must go on. We were running. So for our podcast fans, there's no such thing as running late because they listen to it on demand, whatever. But for our live cast fans and our radio fans, I'm running just a little bit late.
You were battling cryptids out there, right?
I took a wrong turn at Albuquerque. Isn't that the old Bugs Bunny
joke?
The
Bugs Bunny saying, yeah, the old wrong turn in Albuquerque. But also another show business saying, better late than never. I think
Absolutely.
That's a show business saying. So
there's no business like it, you know?
That's another one as well. Yeah, there's multiple show business terms out here. But it's good to be in the studio here. And, of course, like I said, better late than never. So good to be here. Another episode of Bob After Dark, Bob.
Count Panic, while I'm getting the shares in, let's get your weekend update.
Well, this weekend, Bob, again, as a lot of these weekends go, as far as the COVID, the pandemic is happening, kind of slow weekends, but I do want to give a shout out to our friends. I know she listens to the show, Laura Bates of the Challenger Learning Center. She chimes in from time to time here, but she enjoys watching Bob After Dark. I visited there.
Oh,
in Hammond, Indiana. It was a good time.
What's the Challenger Center?
The Challenger Learning Center, right there, tucked away behind the hospitality building and the fitness center of Purdue Northwest, on the campus of Purdue Northwest here in Hammond, Indiana. And it's a great thing to have here in the region. You go there, learn about space, learn about the planets. I mean, from young to old, there's laser light shows going on with some cool soundtracks behind them. And, you know, Bob, it kind of ties into the show here because
we do cover space stuff.
Space and UFOs, they go hand in hand, don't they?
Absolutely.
So I advise you, maybe check it out sometimes. I did some video with that Panic in the Region on
a little shameless
Facebook
plug
too. So
the shameless plug of the Count Panic's side project.
It's the only thing going on for me right now. So that's a good time. But space, the final frontier.
The final frontier. I think that's copyrighted material. Are you ready to get have to go fight? I think it's CBS in court or Viacom.
I think that's the way it goes. I think that's the way it's supposed to happen.
So
there.
So my weekend update.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot. I went and saw Ghostbusters at the drive-in. I feel like
How
I just.
That?
I feel like I just said that a couple weeks ago because I did it again.
There's nothing going on but showing Ghostbusters
at the drive-in. Yeah. So we went and saw Ghostbusters and Men in Black as a double feature.
That's pretty cool. That's a good double feature.
Decent. Yeah, and then we, me and the Queen of the Night, we caught the series premiere of Lovecraft County.
Okay, is it a paranormal thing?
Lovecraft Country. Yeah, it's on HBO.
Okay.
It's a social justice horror a horror show with a bit of like Lovecraftian like mythos to it. I absolutely adored the first episode. Don't really touch a whole lot on the Lovecraftian horror on the show because I don't necessarily agree with a lot of what H.P. Lovecraft was about behind the scenes. He wasn't a very nice person, so we don't cover a lot of the Lovecraftian horror. I mean, the guy did do a lot of figures in the horror community, Cthulhu, etc., that were very big, exciting things, and there is a bit of lore for it. But this show is actually going to be doing some of that some of the wrongs that H.P. Lovecraft had, and they're actually going to be doing it justice, I think. Mm. And the show, the first episode was a heart pounder, man. It was really good. And then I also, because it's COVID and there's not much other to do, I either have show stuff to work on, so that's me working on, you know, notes for the show or answering emails, whatever it is, because we don't have cons, whatever it is that we got going on.
Yeah.
I get to watch TV, Netflix for the day, and, you know, day job stuff. So I started watching the Umbrella Academy.
I heard a lot about this. Now, what goes on in the Umbrella Academy?
The first episode, I'd never watched it. I watched the first episode, and it was different. It's like a superhero kind of show, but like not your traditional run of the mill superhero show.
Are there umbrellas?
No.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I guess there is umbrellas in the show. Like there are umbrellas, but it's not the main focus. But so that's my weekend update. If this is your first time ever listening to Bob After Dark on the Facebook Liveverse, or if you're listening to us on podcast land, what is Bob After Dark? We are a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and, you know, weird things that Count Panic may see in his dreams that haunt him.
Very spooky in my dreams. Yeah, indeed.
We cover weird, spooky news articles of the week that ranges anything from paranormal that makes it to mainstream media, or weird rumor mills, lights in the sky, or advances in science that are almost like science fiction. We also we have a topic of the week, the lore of the week, if you will. And right now we're on Viewer's Choice Month, where you, the fans, are actually picking the topics that we talk about.
I thought you meant me. You pointed at me
first. Yeah, Count Pan. You know what? I'm going to... When's your birthday?
Oh, we passed it by a couple months here, right?
I know, but we were getting
that's true. It's
so
May.
When's your second birthday?
It'd be the middle, like the
whatever. We're gonna have Count Panic
halfway.
Picks. We're gonna have Count Panic Picks month. That's where you're gonna
the
pick
whole month.
The whole month you're gonna pick the topics, and I'm not gonna do anything. I'm actually gonna sit in the producer side.
I think you just want a month off.
Still want a month off? No, I'll still be here. I'm just gonna produce the show, and then you're gonna be the guy in charge of
You'll cat each episode.
So it was so that's it. So it's Voyager's Choice Month. They're gonna. It's where, you know, you the fans are picking it out. And this week for the lore of the week, we're actually gonna be covering. We're gonna be recovering a topic. We're gonna be revisiting probably one of the most elusive creatures we've ever talked about on the show, and something that's really kind of left a question mark with our fans since we last did it. We'll get to more of that later. Let's dive right into reviews. Because we have reviews. We have a review.
A review, okay.
A review.
Was it a good or a bad review?
It's a great review.
Oh, let's hear it.
5-star review from 313GB Ricky. Oh. And the title of the review is Best Paranormal Podcast.
There you go.
It goes, the absolute best paranormal podcast. It's like hanging out with your friends and talking about all kinds of spooky stuff and scientific news. The folklore and weekly stories are always so interesting. 313JB Ricky, who I'm pretty sure that's one of our fans from Detroit, Ricky. Ricky, I just want to say thank you. This is a cheers. Cal Panic and me are going to cheers you. Thank you so much for the review. We appreciate you. Cheers to you, Ricky.
There you go. Cheers, Ricky, right there. Oh.
Now, do you want a cheers live on the show where we drink water in the honor
that's
of
water?
You? That's water?
That's water. Somebody, the cup here isn't water. But
oh, boy.
It looks like
blood.
Water
that
to me, though.
Might be blood, yeah. So, do you want a cheers on the show? Jump over to the Apple Podcast website and leave us a 5-star review and say something nice. If you haven't had a chance to review the podcast, get on it, because it's very important for us. The more 5-star reviews we get on the Apple Podcast, the better the algorithm is, and the more we're going to get discovered. Yeah. So I do highly recommend it. I'm not going to beg you.
Highly appreciate it.
I'd be highly appreciated. So get on over to the Apple Podcast website, leave us a 5-star review, and me and Cal Panical cheers water to you live on the show.
Yeah, on the show, and then afterwards we could cheers and other things.
Other things, that's for after the show. So thank you, Ricky, appreciate you. Count Panic, let's dive into the news, spooky news of the week.
Okay.
We actually have 4 news stories.
Four. Okay.
2 of which are from the same person.
All right.
But let's, and they're all paranormal, actually, except one.
Well, I would hope this is a paranormal show in a way.
Well, no, but we always talk about science.
That's true.
I feel like most of our news stories, because I honestly toyed with the idea of like, well, we should maybe stop the news story thing, but people seem to like it. You know, I feel like I'm like every other like late night talk show host. You know, they like have headlines or something like that. I, you know,
Yeah. Oh, I kind of sent you, I think, over the weekend. I texted you a news story.
You did text me a news story, and I completely forgot about it.
It's a pretty good one, I think.
I'm going to bring that up next week.
Okay.
We're going to put a pin in it. You got to send me things on Facebook.
Yeah.
If you text me, it just gets lost.
Okay. I'll have to send you.
All right. But let's start off with one who actually, I think, holds the record now for the most news articles sent in. Listener Whitney actually sent in an article, and I feel like Whitney sends in most of our articles these days. She probably sends at least, on average, one or two a week. So I just want to give a quick shout out to Whitney. Thank you so much. But she, Whitney sends in a news story about a voodoo priest. The article reads from the World News Daily Report, and it is voodoo priest arrested by the FBI after buying a lock of Donald Trump's hair on Craigslist.
Okay.
A famous voodoo priest from New Orleans was arrested this morning by the FBI after paying an impressive $25,000 for a few strands of President Trump's hair in order to inflict physical harm on him and control him through a voodoo doll. 31-year-old Moses Felicent, an important religious leader in the Louisiana voodoo community, was arrested in possession with 8 grams of what was believed to be Donald Trump's hair. The provenance of the lock of hair has been yet clarified and has been sent to an FBI lab for a DNA analysis, but investors claim that they have strong evidence suggesting it's authentic. According to an FBI spokesperson, Bobby Miller, the accused paid $25,000 on Craigslist for the hair, which she intended to use to create a magical effigy. This is a direct quote from Bobby Miller. He openly professed to worshipers that he intended to use magic to influence American policy and force American president to do as he wishes. The method used may be unusual, but the intent makes it a federal crime.
Of course. Yeah, that's threatening the life of a president there. Well, here's the thing. Go ahead.
Mr. Miller continues and says that let's see here. Mr. Miller insisted that the FBI doesn't believe in magic or voodoo, but acted to condemn the accused in criminal intent while qualm rumors before they started. And he says, we know these dolls are probably powerless. Probably is the key word there. But there are enough rumors about the president being controlled by Russians, Freemasons, and even reptilians.
Yeah.
We don't want another one popping off about voodoo.
Those reptilians, those will get to you right there.
That's story for never. I'll just toss it out.
That'd be a good episode, I think.
Absolutely not. We're not going to be ever talk about the
lizard people.
The lizard people. That's a conspiracy theory, and we're not a conspiracy theory show.
I don't know. I heard things, Bob, but okay.
We'll talk. That's afterwards. But that's for the Bob After Dark Patreon stream launching soon. You guys can catch me talking about conspiracy theories. There's plenty of good podcasts out there that do that kind of a thing. We just don't. You know, there's levels of paranormal. You know, we got spooky stuff, ghost stories.
It stops at reptilians.
For me, it stops at conspiracy theories. It takes a special person to do it, and I applaud those people that find careers in that. That's great. It's just not for me. But, you know, Whitney sent this to me, and she said, I just wanted to point out that this is a time when, because she wanted to refer to it to last week's episode when we talked about the Hex County murders, when she said that, you know, magic, that's magic with a K, is getting brought up in the, you know, federal limelight where there's actual government investigations on this kind of thing. And I find it kind of funny that the FBI is kind of like, well, we don't believe in this, right? But we're going to arrest them anyway.
Well, you got to take precautions. There,
right.
Bob.
And I don't, and I don't want to, and I'm not, this isn't turning political by any means. And I haven't looked at the chat yet. And I refuse, you guys calm down. We're not, this isn't a political
thing. Everybody's calm.
Okay. That's good. we're not, this isn't turning political. This is never going to turn in political. But I just, it's baffling to me that's just how it was handled. Like, he got arrested for practicing. And I guess it goes with like saying it's, you know, when you draw the line and saying you practice religious freedoms, you're not physically causing harm. I mean, and that's where you draw the line of how far do you believe in this sort of thing? And we happen to have people in our private lives that practice said religion, and it's, you know, I don't know. I don't know exactly how I feel about it. It's an interesting story nonetheless.
Well, here's my
Oh, the hashtag panic steak.
Yeah, you know, of course you gotta take everything in the precautionary just in case it was possibly a voodoo there. But I just want to know how authentic is the hair? I mean, $25,000 on Craigslist. Somebody says they're selling Donald Trump's hair. Chances are, I mean, how do you even get that? I'm calling right now. It sounds like a fraud maybe on Craigslist here. I know it's impossible to believe frauds on Craigslist, but this one sounds like one to me for sure.
Well, I
Fraud.
mean, that's a thing.
All right.
All right. Moving on. This is a story I might actually have a stance on. All right. So this one actually comes to us from listener James Norman, or as I call him, just Norm. Norm's a friend and a fan. He sends this to me from the Big Think, and it is Yale scientists restore cellular function in 32 dead pig brains. Researchers hope the technology will further our understanding of the brain, but lawmakers may not be ready for the ethical challenges. Just a couple bullet points. Researchers at the Yale School of Medicine successfully restored some of the functions to the pig brain that had been dead for hours. They hope that the technology will further advance our understanding of the brain, potentially developing new treatments for debilitating diseases and disorders, which I'm all about. I think it's a good thing. The research raises ethical questions and puts to the test of our current understanding of death. Okay, there's a fine line, and I mean, I'm not going to tell you what you should believe in or not. That's not my job. I present something to you guys, as I do even in the paranormal stuff, where I lay out a topic and I want you guys to think about it. When do you draw the line on, physically changing and altering the circle of life? You know what I mean? I don't want to it's playing God is what it is. And I mean, I'm not going to tell you guys what to believe in, of course, but there's a certain level of a cycle of life that everything in existence has to go through. I understand that death is a painful thing, but in cultures and in the craft and in the occult and everything, death is kind of a it's an important thing. It's another process. And when you take that process out, I don't know. I think you're just disturbing the balance of nature and force. And I understand that, like, it really hurts when a loved one passes, right? And I get that. I've been there. Everybody has. And it's something everybody's going to go through at some point in their
Well,
life.
Bob, let's not get crazy here.
Well, I mean, it is.
I'm a vampire.
You're a
I
vampire,
continue to go on.
but I there's an old saying from a movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Bill and Ted's Bogus
Of
Journey, and it's,
course. Yeah.
whether you're a king or a street sweeper, everybody has their dance with the Reaper. I mean, that's like a very kind of like I don't know. I just don't really see. It's not a good thing to do. You don't play God. You don't disturb that
Yeah.
because nothing good happens, and there's even like the story with the monkey paw, which we'll cover at some point on the show. But the person wished for the person to come back to life, and you have to understand there's a consequence to that. Death is a process, it's a thing, it's something we all have to do at some point. Maybe not you,
Vampire.
you're a
Yeah.
vampire, but I don't know. I just don't appreciate the concept of us faking death. Plus, who wants to live forever? Do you, I don't.
Well, let me tell you something.
Okay, let's see. I want to hear Count Panic's take on
Here's
this.
my take.
Hashtag
I
panic
lived
steak.
through many lifetimes here, Bob. I've seen it all, you know, from the medieval times to the ancient Greeks times to, you know, the ages of Lincoln and Washington and all that stuff. I've been there. I've done that there, Bob. So let me just tell you, it goes on for too long. It'd be nice to maybe have a rest at some point. So you're right. There comes a time where we gotta just kind of just accept the end there and, you know, wait for what's on the other side.
Exactly. And I think the other side is just another part of the adventure, right? I'm a firm believer in the
Yeah.
afterlife. I mean, this is what I do.
Yeah.
So, see the show. I mean,
Of course.
I just think that when you mess around with those types of things, it's not necessarily a good thing. And I mean, there's a certain level of stuff to it. And, there's levels of communicating with the dead and, metaphysical stuff that I think's okay. But as far as physically stopping it, I don't know. Now, do I think that there's something to be learned about helping cure brain disease and stuff? Absolutely. And I think that's a good thing to practice and learn and, you know, further study. That's good. But at physically stopping death from happening, like, permanently, no, that's not good. One of our viewers in the chat chimes in, and it's from Vietnam, and said, would it depend if the same consciousness would return, or would the mind be inhabilitated by a new consciousness? That's a good philosophical question, Viet. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. Would another conscious take over body as host, or are you bringing back the same consciousness, or is a new consciousness going to be born? And I think that's a question I don't think us as humans are ready to take on just yet. I think there's certain things that we shouldn't do, and that's definitely one of them.
How about you hear the stories about, you know, people being frozen in time and hopes to come back later on? You think
I think that's a little different, yeah. You know, cryogenics and whatnot. Yeah. I think that's cheating death, but that's a little different than physically bringing back somebody from the dead. That's a whole nother thing.
All right. We await your arrival, Walt Disney there. So go ahead.
Isn't that a rumor?
No, I think it's really, they proved it.
All right.
Well, that's a spooky news story for a different day.
That's we'll have to do that when we revisit the Disney one.
Yeah.
If you guys haven't listened to the Disney, the Haunting Full World of Disney episode me and Steve put out on the podcast back when I wasn't in the studio, you guys should go check that out. That's probably one of my best episodes.
All right.
So you guys should go check that out.
After this one, though.
You guys still watch and listen to this, but you can go back a couple episodes and listen to that. It's one of my favorites. So here is one of the first news stories coming to us from Pat from Ghostly Podcast.
He sent in a story.
Pat sent in two news stories.
Okay.
And one of which was definitely picking fun at me. But this one's not. And this is flying dinosaur sighting on the rise in North Carolina. this story comes to us from the Charlotte Stories, which is a news outlet in Charlotte, North Carolina. North Carolina has been a big home of legends such as Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, and lizard men. But recently, there's been a growing belief that a modern pterodactyl is living in North Carolina. Pterodactyls were reptiles that many scientists believe were extinct long ago. And the idea is that these sightings of these flying pterodactyls have been rampant lately. And I mean, even as far as like last week on Wednesday, there was another sighting of these pterodactyls. And this isn't the first time I've brought this up on the show. We covered this, I want to say semi-recently, mm-hmm. We had a pterodactyl sighting out in like the Pacific, like Southwest.
They're out there.
I mean, that's what some people believe are what the Thunderbird is. Like the Thunderbird sightings was actually a pterodactyl that, you know, somehow survived extinction. So maybe there's something to it. Hashtag panic steak.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love dinosaurs, Bob. But
change your mind?
If they were, if they were roaming around today, I think I would be terrified. So hopefully, this story proves to be false here. I don't know if it's a good thing to have dinosaurs back roaming the earth. I think they're best left in the history books.
Oh, so no. You're not gonna get up on that floor and walk the dinosaur.
That one I just did.
You like that?
That was pretty good.
That's years of improv training for you.
Not bad at all. Very good there. You know, my extent of dinosaurs nowadays is eating dino-shaped nuggets. So.
Not even the oatmeal eggs, right?
No,
none of those either.
Forget that.
So I don't know. Maybe there's something to it. Moving on to our last news story. We don't get to cover four very much. It's usually three, but I had four good ones. This last one has been breaking news, and this has been sent to me by a lot of people. And I've actually had some really good Photoshop sent to me of this that I didn't share. I mean, I can if you guys are interested in that. But people have been sending me Photoshops of said entity that has escaped their bindings, and that entity that I'm referring to is Annabelle.
Well, this is, I sent you this one.
Oh, this was you.
Well, I didn't send you the story, but I mentioned this to you here.
Oh, okay. So this is what you're referring to.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, so we did cover what
we
were talking about.
There you go.
Okay.
That was my choice.
Well, okay, so this is a Cop Panic's pick, Cop Panic story, but Pat sent me the actual article.
There you go.
And many of you, because as you guys may know, I have a thing a fear, little, I guess you can call it a fear of dolls, and especially haunted ones, and you guys, the fans, have a lot of fun picking on me about that. And Annabelle is probably the most haunted doll in existence.
And it's
Robert,
not, so it's not just a movie, it's a real doll.
It's a real doll. Yeah. The Annabelle doll sits sad on display at the Ed and Lorraine Warren's Occult Museum in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And she sat there for a long time. It's not like you see in the movies. Annabelle, we'll maybe do an episode about it soon. God, I don't want to do that. But Annabelle is a Raggedy Ann doll. It's not what you see in the movie. It's not this porcelain.
A lot less terrifying in real life.
It's a doll panic. It's, of course,
well,
it's terrifying.
Compared to the one they have in the movie, which is very creepy. Raggedy Ann, not that terrifying on the doll chart. For me, at least.
Well, go see Annabelle. There's stories about her, which we'll cover in Annabelle in the future. But a rumor started arising that Annabelle actually escaped the confines of the Warren's house.
Yeah.
And apparently it all spawned from a change on her Wikipedia article, which Wikipedia being a valid source of information, apparently. And then saying a Wikipedia update says that the toy, which inspired films about the possessed doll, escaped and appears to have conjured the whole thing. Doo-doo-tsh. Annabelle, who was inspired several horror films, is safe and sound at home after a rumor reported that sparked by Wikipedia had fans thinking the possessed doll has escaped. Annabelle is kept at the Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut, and fans started tweeting about her apparent escape after someone updated her Wikipedia back on August 14th at, of all times, 3 a.m., the witching hour. Tony Sperry, the son-in-law of Ed and Lorraine Warren, says that Annabelle's alive, and he says, well, I shouldn't say alive, but Annabelle is here in all her infamous glory. And he's actually, she's fine. And he's inherited all of the Ed and Lorraine's stuff, their entire, you know, occult stuff, which is great because a lot of us were wondering what was going to happen to their collection after they passed. And the son-in-law has it. The museum isn't open, I don't think, for business. I think there's a lot of zoning issues going on there. I'm not too sure. I haven't made it out there yet. But our old pal Zach Baggins made a tweet about it. And Zach said, if hashtag Annabelle escaped, remember y'all, she only flies first class. I'd start there. Good job, Zach.
Under control with him.
Good job. Zach Baggins, everybody.
Well, okay, so...
Hashtag panic state.
Yeah, so they keep her, of course, in this very... she's in like a glass container, right? Basically?
She's kept in a... You can look it up online, Ed and Lorraine, and even at the end of The Conjuring, the first film, they show actual photos from the museum, and there's been countless interviews and little video work done at Ed and Lorraine's like occult museum. And in there, they actually show like the real Annabelle doll in her case, and it's you know, an actual like display cabinet.
Well, here's the thing with the dolls. I mean, in the movies too, and in real life, people say the dolls move. Like, they walk into a room, a doll is sitting there, and then they walk into the next room, and the doll is there. But they never show really the act of how the doll is moving. Is the doll walking on its own, or is just a phantom moving the doll around? Like, how does that really work?
Well, I mean, that'd be a topic for another when we do the Annabelle episode. But the idea is, and this dates back a long time in the occult world, of the idea of taking a vessel and having a spirit enter vessel. It's no different than humans, except you're not going to cause harm. Mm. You know, you would willingly let a spirit possess said doll into the entity, and the doll, I've seen videos of supposed truth that the dolls may be haunted and moving on their own based on possession, just like how a malevolent spirit may possess and haunt, you know, a person and move them around and cause action. We have our first caller on the line.
Yeah, we got John on the line.
John, first to the race and first to the finish. How's it going, John?
Hey, good evening, Bob. How are you today?
Oh, not bad. John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, priest, is normally associated with a Roman Catholic Church or a Byzantine Church or
yeah,
a,
of course.
Orthodox Church. So this voodoo priest, I don't think, you know, if he was a leader of any one of those three churches, that he would probably be a priest anymore. So is this, I mean, you know, anybody could give themselves a title as a priest, but was he actually a priest leading a congregation?
Yeah, so voodoo is a practiced religion, just like Catholicism or anything like that. And their leaders in the church are high priests or high priestesses. Priestesses obviously would be the females, priests would be the males. So that's just their terminology. It's no different than, you know, a pastor, priest, bishop, whatever it is. They refer to their leaders in that world as priests or doctors as well. You can also be a voodoo doctor.
All right, I'm trying to follow you on that. I mean, you know,
sure. So the term priest is also used. The, believe it or not, the voodoo culture actually takes a lot from Catholicism, believe it or not. A lot of times when you see a lot of like voodoo imagery, you may see pictures of our saints, and that's because in me basically summing up an entire history lesson into a couple sentences, when the practice came here to America, they knew the imagery that they saw, the people that were practicing, and they would use certain imagery in their practices because that's what they knew. So in voodoo practices, it's not uncommon to see pictures of cherubs and whatnot. So it's just their terminology, John. The word priest is a very open one, and yeah, you would typically associate it with Catholics. That's how I grew up. That's how Count Panic grew up too, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's just what we know. But in the voodoo culture, that's their religious leaders as well. They refer to them as priests or priestesses.
Well, you know, I know you're a believer in, you know, just about everything, and you know, in a way, so am I. But I know that in the Catholic Church, and I understand what you're saying, but a lot of times a priest who is under direction, obviously, of a bishop, they're told not to really mingle and stuff like that because, you know, make a long story short, there was a vision on a tree in East Chicago in the harbor section.
I never heard this story.
Of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and I was there, and a lot of people there. I mean, it was recorded with pictures, recorded with video, and we actually seen it. But if you, I don't want to mention the Catholic priest, but when I asked him about it, they don't want to hear about it, you know. And then I kind of dug into a little further with somebody else, and I was told that they were told by the bishops not to. Which I don't understand why, because, you know, God could appear anywhere, right?
Absolutely. Miracles can happen in any capacity, right? And that's just their belief system, you know, different strokes for different folks. If
right,
that's...
Now, again, I'm not saying this is every Catholic priest. It's just
sure.
So, I mean, you know, 1 out of 10, maybe they don't want to, you know, dabble in it too much, but
absolutely, and that's a very valid point, John. I hope I educated a little bit today. And that's some priests, they don't want to think that some things are happening. I think a lot of that has to do with just you know, the concept of trying to stray away from mass hysteria. I don't think that they want to draw a lot of attention to something that either is probably, you know, either wrong or whatever it might be. Do you know what I mean? It's just one of those things where it's like, try to keep the peace.
Well, definitely. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that. The less attention, you know, maybe the better in some cases like that. So,
absolutely. I hope you learned something today, John, and I'm glad you taught me something today, too.
I always learn something from you, Bob. That's why I call. So,
thanks, John.
Have a nice evening.
Oh, you too. You know, John calls every week.
This show could be on PBS. It's very educational.
I try. That's the point. You know, as much as somebody asked me, they're like, what's your show? And I'm like, it's kind of like an edutainment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I want to teach you guys something, but I'm also an entertaining one.
We're all learning. Yes.
Absolutely. So that's where we were at. I lost my train of thought there, Count Panic. We were talking about the Annabelle
doll. The doll, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that it's all
It was all hoax. Annabelle is still there.
For now.
Jack chimed into the chat. Our old paranormal investigator friend Jack says she travels via teleportation.
That'd be interesting to see the process of that. Like, just to watch that.
I don't think you want to. I don't think mortal eyes. I mean, maybe you, but I don't think we're supposed to see.
No,
that.
I guess not.
Okay, so moving on to the next segment of the show. This is where you guys, the fans, submit your ghost stories, your cryptid sightings, your UFO encounters, your spooky tale. And I like to highlight you guys because I'm not at conventions where you guys can share your stories with me. And I always, the phone lines are open, but people, you know, don't like to call, which is fine. Some people don't like to hear the sound of their own voice. Obviously not me, because I have a podcast. Mm. But people chime in, they email, they send in the messages, and I love to read them. So every week I share something a little different, and I'll give you guys an opportunity on where you can share your stories as well. This one actually comes to us from the person who requested the episode today, Jen.
Okay.
Yes. So it says, hello. Hey there, Bob. I wanted to share with you an experience with you guys. And to be transparent, I did share this with Rebecca on Ghostly as well, but I listened to you both, which is absolutely fine. Ghostly is our sister show, and they're my podcast idols, so I appreciate that you can share that
you
with
us. You don't
have
to choose between what podcast
you listen to. Don't. Yeah. Ghostly and us are on good terms, is saying it lightly. There are, you know, that's our sister cast. So, and it says, though I had not had many experiences with the paranormal, which is good, I have always loved spooky things. And if I knew they were not real, and she emphasizes not. As a child, I have a large Italian family and had spent much time in their homes while the tradition of my family is that it takes a family to raise a child. Let me preface that I only had one childhood experience that was very negative. A man approached me when I was 10 years old, and a man approached me as a 10-year-old riding her bike and exposed himself to me and propositioned to me as I ran fast as I could and told an adult, and they called the police. After that, I was fairly guarded around men, and I did not know, understandably. The summer after it had happened, I spent a night at an aunt and uncle's home. That is a very religious household with two devout Catholics as the residents. The morning after my night as my aunt and uncle were getting showered, I went downstairs to the kitchen. It was a gorgeous sunny summer morning, and I went and, excuse me guys, I'm trying to read it here and it's causing me a little technical issues. And as I went to wait for breakfast, as I sat on the floor with my back up against the wall, mid-room, a white, smoky mist, terrifying-like face that almost looked like a skull, appeared to me and rushed towards me and at my face, and I put my arms up to shield myself and tightly close my eyes. As I opened my eyes, only about a split second later, it, and she puts it in quotations, was gone. I raced back upstairs and sat on the stairs waiting for my aunt and uncle and did not speak a word about what just happened. As a child, how would anybody actually believe me, and the home I was in, would they think of me as such sight, being as religious as they are? The second thing that happened that summer, I spent the night at my cousin's house, and she was a mother of three young girls, two of which were twins. I thought I would spend the entire night and be a big help to her taking care of the young twins. It was late at night, and I awoke in her spare room when the door was open and the hall light was on, and I could hear her as she was tending to the twin babies. I could not see her around the corner, but I could hear her and see the shadow in the hallway. My eyes scanned to the corner of the room opposite the doorway, and there stood a man in a white tank top with cut-off jean shorts, and his arms were crossed in front of his chest. He just stood there staring at me, and I stared back. And my eyes would glance over to the doorway, and I could see him, but also hear my cousin only around the corner from me in the room. I was terrified and did not say a word. As an adult now knowing about sleep paralysis, I do not think that's what it was. I remember I could not move due to my fear, but I know I could move my arms and legs, etc., as he stood there. and he did not move. I finally mustered enough guts and got up and darted out of the room and around the corner into the rooms to where my cousin was with her babies. I ran into the room and hid behind the baby dressing table and told her about the man in the other room staring at me. She was freaked out and, needless to say, went around the corner, turned on the light, and no one was there. I slept with the rest of the night with my light on. I have not had any other things personally happen to me. I am more of a believer, but a guarded believer. Whether these things were in my mind or not real, I do not know. All I know is I sit here as a 51-year-old woman, and these images and memories are still very haunting. The rest of the summer, I did not spend a night anywhere else much later that year. Thank you, Jen Peters.
Hmm. How about that?
That's
every week these get more and more terrifying, I'm telling you, you know?
I'm glad you enjoy those.
Well, because, you know, people have such vivid experiences, you know, with things that would terrify me if this were to happen to me. And a lot of these folks out there, it's just it happens. So happens more often than you think it happens.
And it happens to not everybody has an experience, but the experiences don't discriminate, Count Panic. They just don't. They happen every day to every common person you could possibly think of. When I'm at conventions and I talk to people about their experiences, I have everybody from every walk of life physically coming to me and telling me about experiences. Mm-hmm. And I mean, even in the case of Jen here, who writes in, and she's, you know, an adult woman and still remembers these back when she was a child, that's, you know, those things stay with you. That's stuff that mm-hmm. you will always remember. And I mean, the traumatic experience aside, which is an awful thing to happen to anybody at any age, let alone a little girl. I mean, I don't know necessarily if the two experiences were related to that, but the fact of the matter is that's tragic. That's scary stuff, especially with the skull story. Yeah. I don't, you know, that's weird. It's a weird situation. And especially with the gentleman in the jeans and the tank top, that doesn't strike me as a shadow person. You know what I mean? That doesn't strike me as the things that we typically see when people wake up from sleep paralysis and whatnot. That's an image. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's somebody's outfit. And I don't, you know, it sounds like nobody broke in, and luckily she's okay. She was fine. That's just a story. Like, who was that? What was he doing there? Was he crossing over? Was he staying around? Did he just appear to her? Do you know what I mean?
Jeans and a tank top. Maybe somebody in the past with jeans and a tank top.
Oh, very much possible.
Although it's a common look, I guess.
Absolutely.
Could be anybody.
Could be anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your take on the story.
Well, like I said, these keep getting terrifying and more terrifying week after week. And, you know, this is a good thing to have here, Bob, because some people don't like to talk about this in person. They could send this in. Now, do they have to say their name when they send it in, or can they be anonymous?
They could be anonymous. That's completely fine. I strive for that stuff. So, I mean, don't hesitate to reach out to me via just being anonymous and sharing what it is. I have no problem with that. That's completely fine. If you want to have your name said, you're definitely welcome for that. And I am happy to give you my 2 cents. I have many years experience studying this kind of a thing, so I'm very much, you know, well versed in that kind of a world, so I'm happy to give you my 2 cents. And even if you don't want it shared and you just want to talk to me about an experience, I'm happy to do that for you too.
I gotta get the memo out there, you know. John, caller John, well, he wears a lot of tank tops, but he wears jorts. So if this ghost was wearing, or this apparition here was wearing jorts and a tank top, then you might be able to pinpoint that. But like I said, very distinct look, but yet a common look as well. Very interesting, Bob.
Absolutely. So, do you have a news story that you want to share with us and get your name shouted out? Mm-hmm. Or do you have a paranormal experience that you want to share with us on the show? Reach out. Send us a Facebook message. Like us on Facebook, Bob After Dark. You could shoot me an email, bob@bobafterdark.com. That's how Miss Peters was able to actually reach out to us. Or you can reach out to us on Instagram @bobafterdark. Slide into those DMs.
There you go. We're asking you. We're begging you to slide into our DMs.
Absolutely.
Usually people would say, don't slide into our DMs. Slide into our DMs.
All right, folks. So let's just take a quick break. This is where you in the podcast world are going to hear some words from a podcast that you should be listening to. And for the live folk, stick around. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
Oh. And we're back.
You know, I really do like that podcast that was we just heard from. It's a good podcast.
Ghostly's a great show.
Yeah.
Ghostly.
How do we know that's going to be the one that we're...
Because I've determined in my mind right now that I'm going to put the Ghostly podcast
okay,
promo
good. Yeah,
here.
Yeah, it's a good podcast. Good podcast.
Check out Ghostly. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Count Panic.
Yes.
What do you know about Louisville, Kentucky?
Louisville, Kentucky. Well, they're home of the Louisville Slugger, right? The baseball bat?
Yes.
Yeah. That's about the extent of it there, Bob.
It's also the home of one of the most terrifying, I don't even know if it's a cryptid, it's a monster, it's something, entity that we've ever discussed on the show prior, and that is the Poplick Monster.
Poplick Monster.
The Poplick Monster.
I heard about this one before.
We covered it.
Yeah.
Once upon a time ago, back when Count Panic and I were just doing the show strictly as a radio show, and a Facebook Live show, we covered the topic of the Poplick Monster. This was early, man. This was probably within our first, like, 2-3 months doing
so,
the show.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is a long time ago. We discussed the concept of the Poplick Monster. And I thought it was put to sleep, right? I thought we were done talking about it. But I've had several people bring it up to me since. Fans of the show that are into the idea of hunting and, you know, protection, people being protected against things. I have, I've kind of always thought about it myself as probably one of the more terrifying entities we've ever covered. Mm-hmm. And Jen Peters actually reached out on Instagram and said, "Hey, have you ever heard of the Poplick Monster?" And I said, "Yeah, we covered it a long time ago." Yeah. And she said, "Oh, I'm really sorry I missed it." And I said, "Well, you know what? Maybe it's time that we revisit this for the podcast fans because they never had a chance to hear the story before. And maybe give a new light to some of our fans that watch the Facebook Live show." Somebody pointed out on the chat. Oh, our friend Meg from the Attack of the Mothman show.
Oh, yes.
Chimed in
yeah,
the chat. Yeah.
Great cast.
She says my shirt and actually is a... it says it's a Poplick Monster shirt.
Is it now?
It is. This was a gift from Liz Biddle. I was at C2E2 this year, and Liz comes up to me and says, "I went to Poplick, Kentucky. I went to Louisville. And I found this shirt, and you had to have it." And it says Goatman Lives, which Goatman and the Poplick Monster. Goatman's a whole other cryptid in the same kind of vicinity, but the Poplick Monster has many different origins that kind of correlate back to that idea of... the Poplick Monster.
So they're not the same thing, but they're in the same area.
Some people believe that they are the same exact thing.
Uh-huh.
Some people call it the cousin. That's what I like to refer to it as. Same family, same species of cryptid, bipedal, half man, half goat.
Because what's the chances two cryptids live in your area? I mean, that's the jackpot
and
right
that's,
there for people.
So that's where our story starts. Okay. Let's talk about what area we're in. So we're talking about Louisville, Kentucky and Poplick, Kentucky. Poplick, Kentucky is like a suburb of Louisville. It's like an unincorporated area, whatever you want to call it. And in that section of America in the Appalachian Mountains, there are a ton of cryptids that all kind of have the same exact characteristics. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like half human, half goat hybrids. There's the sheep squatch, which is a half person, half sheep. I don't know why, but in that section of Appalachia, that's what they believe happened. So some people believe that the goat man, the Poplick Monster, is the cousin of the goat man.
Really? Huh.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about its origin because there are four different kind of thoughts of what this thing is. Four different origin stories. The first one was that it was a circus freak, circus performer, that was traveling on via train from one area that the circus was on, moving to the other next area that the circus would be moving to. And one of the theories is that when the train crashed, the Pulpwick monster actually got free and lived in this little foresty area right underneath this train truss, mm-hmm. which is a big train bridge. That's what the Pulpwick monster is known for. When you search it on Google, you're going to find this horrifying goat man, and you're going to see a lot of pictures of a bridge truss, like a big train, like over thing, right?
Sounds bad.
Doo-doo.
There you go. I'll see my way out.
You'll see your way out. Goodbye, yeah, your check's in the mail. Goodbye. We're looking for a new producer. Yeah. We gotta get that guy. We gotta get that guy Mike. From, yeah, Hashtag.
He's on standby here.
He's on standby. Yeah. All right. The second story is that the Pulpwick Monster, still being circus performer, was actually able to crash that train via psychic abilities, mm-hmm. and actually crashed a train intentionally, and now lives in rubble under the caves that are like rubble in the caves surrounding that train bridge area. The third one is that a farmer sacrificed a bunch of goats in the name of Lucifer and actually gained this ability to be some sort of, you know, entity. Mm-hmm. So this one has more of a paranormal spin than like scientific cryptozoology explanation, pseudoscience. This is like the straight up metaphysical explanation. Like this farmer sacrificed a goat, drank its blood, and then became a half man, half goat creature.
Ah, as would happen when you do that. It's only fitting that that's going to happen when you do something like that.
The fourth one, and this one, I don't know if I really buy into this origin story either, but a chemist experiment gone wrong and became not necessarily a half man, half goat, but somehow got characteristics of like a monster and grotesque like appearance and decided to live out life in seclusion in that like region of the woods.
That sounds like the movie version of it, the chemical lab spill and things going wrong in a lab, and then this creature rises from the ashes there. Good
yes.
movie right there.
There is a Pulpwick Monster movie.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah, it's a 15-minute short that they did. It's called The Pulpwick Monster.
Ah. Mm-hmm. To check it out.
Yeah, it's available.
All right.
You can find it. So let's talk a little bit about the appearance. And I keep referring to this half man, kind of half goat, half sheep kind of looking big tall thing, kind of like a satyr from mythology.
Yeah.
Except satyrs are like, you know, smaller. This is a big brooding entity, and it's got small little horns on it. Kind of like if you look at a statue of like Behemoth, it's kind of the same concept, but except this is a little bit more terrifying. The Pulpwick Monster is not known to speak physical words, more or less able to speak to them telepathically, and kind of drives people through hypnosis. Its abilities are as follows. The Pulpwick Monster is known to throw its voice, meaning that the Pulpwick Monster doesn't have a voice of its own, but it can speak to you in a voice that's familiar to you. Back when we had the first episode of the podcast, we talked about the Ukeona and the Wendigo all have those similar abilities. They throw their voices in order to try to lead people towards something. For example, maybe you would hear your mother in the woods calling out for you, and then you're like, why is my mom in the woods? And, you know, you go and chase after them and, you know, meet your demise. The second thing is luring from dreams. So this is a dream-walking entity. So think of it as Freddy Krueger. It'll appear to your dreams and try to lure you to this area. The third one, and there's only a couple, like, cases of this. The Pulpwick Monster is known to leap really high and run really fast. And some say that it will actually leap onto roads from the, railroad truss and actually leap on the cars and cause them to crash. There's not many stories of that, but there are a couple, so it's worth mentioning. The number one thing it likes to do, it doesn't like to get its hands dirty by itself. It lures people to the railroad, which, by the way, is still extremely active and extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. Do not go to the Pulpwick Bridge, the train truss, because it's still active, there's no place for you to go. It's high up in the air. I mean, you're, you know, when you're going up there trying to find it, or you're looking down below it, you can probably go into the woods around it. I don't recommend it because it might be infested by the public monster.
Yeah.
But what if I was to tell you that this cryptid actually has a body count?
So unlike other cryptids, this one has actually killed.
Yes. Now, whether or not you believe it's real, that's another story. But the cause of death is for the 100% is the fact that people go to that railroad crossing, like that, not the crossing, but the bridge, feeling like they're compelled to go and hunt down this thing or just go there to go see it. Even like cases of last year when I was doing some research back into this, when I was getting my notes again ready again, I mean, there's still cases of this people dying as early as last year. Mm. Like there was an Ohio woman, she was a budding cryptozoologist, and she felt compelled to go to that train and that train trust. And she went up on the bridge, and when that train comes, there's no place for you to go. You're high up into the air. There's no, oh, let me just step off to the side. There's no side. It's a drop off. And those trains come quick. They come sudden. Yep. And there's no warning. There's no railroad crossing thing that goes down and says, you know, beep, 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 beep. You're up there and it comes, and there's no place for you to go. I mean, you could try to jump, which is a story that I'm going to tell you guys of Raquel Bain and her partner. They went up there, and this was several years ago. Her partner was really compelled to go to the bridge. Mm-hmm. He felt like as if he was being called to the bridge by something.
Mm.
And I don't necessarily know if they knew the story of the public monster, but they said they were compelled to go there, and they went there on a walk one night. And all of a sudden, a train came. Her partner was actually like a jiu-jitsu trainer, so he was able to leap down a la the scene from Lost Boys and grab onto the truss and just kind of like hang there. And he thought Raquel would be quick enough as well and strong enough as well to leap down, and she didn't make it. And Raquel unfortunately passed away and left two kids behind. And I mean, her partner now, he says in the interview, he says, because of something that called out to us, you know, I'm raising two kids on my own.
Well, did he ever say what was it in his mind or physical? Hey,
he
come here.
He dreamt of it and dreamt just he it. Felt it. You know, you get that feeling sometimes, yeah, that you want to go somewhere. So, I mean, even if you don't believe in the physical, like, embodiment of the public monster, people have died in the name of it and trying to go hunt it down. Yeah. This is horribly dangerous. You know, I stress to people enough when they're going and do paranormal investigations that A, you don't go to like a dangerous area. You don't go to, you don't go, you know, into abandoned buildings by yourself. You A, don't go by yourself, and B, you really got to make sure wherever you're going at least has some sort of like safe structuring. You know, a lot of stories about abandoned buildings or it's haunted, I mean, there's a lot of those that have structure damage and you might fall and hurt yourself. So I always stress to people when they're doing investigations to like make sure you know where you're going, or at least tell people where you're going. You know, I mean, there's safeties to it, but there's no good that could come out from being on top of those railroad tracks, man. And that's just the ultimate thing. And people legitimately go there feeling compelled, and that's terrifying. That's a horrifying thought to me, that there's an actual body count to this thing.
Have they put signs up in the area? Hey, if you hear something here,
no,
probably best not to follow this.
No, because obviously the people of that area are highly skeptical to it.
Yeah. I mean,
and they warn people constantly, you know. Mm-hmm. You can find the bridge on Google Maps. It's not hard. You could just do Google it. But man, let me stress this to you guys again. Don't go to that bridge. At least don't go walking on it. Stay on the ground level.
Yeah, but what if you even go to the ground level and get the whole thing in your mind that someone's calling you close enough to it? So you have a strong mind here, Bob.
Well, that's the scary thing. There's lots of stories in the paranormal world about creatures that are able to call out to you and compel you to do things. The Wendigo is one. Sirens or mermaids, that's yes, another big one. You know, they call to you and something bad happens. Anything that could get into your mind isn't ultimately, in my opinion, probably the scariest entities that actually exist.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that would be probably, this ranks up there with probably one of the more dangerous things I've ever talked about on the show, just based on, you know, breaking your willpower and making you you're compelled to do something that's really dangerous.
Now, I gotta bring this up here because you, of course, like to venture out there and maybe from time to time track these things down. Is this the one you wouldn't go after? You think maybe it's probably best. Maybe I like to visit the area.
I would
maybe
visit
not
the area. I would go
down.
See the underbridge. Mm-hmm. I would be heavily prepared for me going there, but I would never, no, don't go on that bridge, man. There's no reason for anybody other than like railroad workers to physically be up on that bridge. And I can't stress that enough.
But so, even the woods around it.
I would go check that out.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be prepared to go. I mean, I'm not, obviously there's always a level of danger to things, but this thing apparently, you know, it's just what it is. So, I mean, I'm not afraid to hunt it down and like go hunting for it if I was to go do this sort of a thing, but I absolutely would not go on the railroad tracks.
Would you be prepared to take it on if you come toe to toe and face to face with it?
That's the thing. I don't have an answer for you on how to go toe to toe with this thing, because outside of a couple like weird rumors, there's never been like a physical like sighting of this thing.
Really?
I mean, there's some faked photos and people think that what they're seeing is Goatman, but man, it's tough. But we'll get to that. So I actually was able to interview somebody on the last time we did the episode, and I'll reshare it. I was able to interview somebody from Louisville who actually went hunting for the Popolik monster as a boy, as Chris Biddle, one of a dear friend of mine, my mentor in the performance world. I actually talked to him, and I'm just like, hey, Chris, you know, I know you're from Louisville. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, what do you know about the Popolik monster? And he laughed. He's like, man, I haven't heard that since I was a kid. And he said when he was a young kid, he was at a one of his friend's birthday parties. And I guess the uncle there was like, you know, everybody has that uncle. And the uncle there apparently like knew where the Popolik monster's like nesting ground was. And Chris said that they all got on their bikes and they rode to go see where this creature was at. And in the cave, lo and behold, there was actual train wreckage there. And Chris, you know, and them checked out and rode their bikes away. He said, you know, Chris is a proclaimed skeptic, like probably one of the biggest skeptics you'll ever meet in your life. And he's like, oh, you know, that could have just been any kind of wreckage. But what was kind of strange was he's like, I don't know if that was circus train wreckage or not, but he did say that there was train wreckage in there. And apparently that's where the den of the Popolik monster is down where all Chris right. was supposedly at. It's a common theme down there. And this is, you know, this goes anywhere in the country when you're, you know, you're a kid growing up and your friends always talk about, oh, let's go, you know, I dare you to go into this haunted house on the block or something like that. And you get dared to go like investigate. Right. And Chris was saying that's like a big thing down there. Is the local, like the local kids growing up will be like, oh, I dare you to go wander through. Because obviously, you know, they're not going on the trains, right? Yeah. But, you know, oh, let's go check out the caves. And Chris said growing up, that was like a big fear for him. And like, for him and his friends, that this goat thing would come out at them. And just finishing up here, there's not a lot of physical the sightings, you know, like when we talk about other cryptids or monsters, demons, whatever, we've heard physical, like actual apparitions or, you know, physical sightings of things. There's not anything really, outside of maybe the couple of people that said that it jumped on their car. And I mean, there's something to it, but there's no physical embodiment. And the few people that did, they said they've seen, glowing eyes in the woods on a bipedal goat man.
Okay.
And the newest bit of information, this is new from the last one, is apparently the last sighting, and I use that term really loosely, is that they found the Popolik monster carrying a big axe.
Well, that, why does he need that?
Firewood?
I was gonna say, isn't he devastating enough? I mean,
we don't know if the thing's strong or not, Cal. I mean, it could be like a legitimate mental threat, like a spiritual threat, but a physical threat might not.
Well, if
he
looks like anything like what your shirt has on it, then it seems like it might be a very strong entity.
I mean, it's possible. But apparently, I mean, maybe it's just the depiction of how to make this thing scarier is that it carries an axe.
Do the locals, I mean, do they ever gather around and talk about this creature, or do they like have, do they?
Oh, they do. They it's like I said, it's kind of like the, you know, every local area, and I'll just say it because it's your favorite. You know, our area has the Gary Witch.
The Gary Witch. Yes.
Or probably more popular than that, Resurrection Mary. You know, Diana Dunes, or what's another one? The Klein Avenue Ghost.
Klein Avenue is a big one.
The Klein Avenue Ghost. You know, we have those. But down there in Louisville, Kentucky, it's all about the Popelik Monster.
See, those, we have, do have a lot of ghost tales, but we don't have here in the region, at least, like a, we can't celebrate like something like that, a monster, you know?
There's, outside the Mothman sightings, I couldn't tell you.
Well, the Mothman's universal, isn't it?
Well, no, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, outside the Mothman sightings, I couldn't tell you, like, a cryptid sighting here.
This cryptid is specifically,
it's, this one's specific to Popelik,
yeah,
and
nobody else has this. Gray,
and, like, the rural part of Louisville.
Yeah. So you can only get this. That's like in Alabama, they got the leprechaun. You could only go there and get that leprechaun there. Nowhere else.
Yeah, no, nowhere else.
Yeah.
You know, I whenever we talk about an entity on the show, I always like to tell you guys how to defend yourself against it, right? Yeah. I always like to give you guys an idea of how to protect yourself. And Count Panic, I know in the chat, there's somebody in Johnny just chimed in and said the Gary Witch. You're not telling the story. We're moving on.
Look at Johnny. Look it up online. I think the video is still circulating.
It's still circulating. Count Panic's the only Gary. One. Count Panic is the only one.
That got a lot of attraction.
No,
Gary,
yeah,
Witch.
It certainly did. And you're the only one still circulating.
I believe
to
in
this
it.
Day. Okay, but how do you hunt down the Popelik Monster? How do you stop it? I don't have an answer for you. This thing exists purely, like, scarily in the woods. It doesn't make itself presence known. It's calling out to you in your dreams. It's trying to compel you to go up on the railroad so you're being killed by, you know, a giant moving fast freight train. I don't know. That's tough. I've had conversations with hunters since that, you know, actual hunters. And I brought it up to them, and Dr. Ben Vanerson, you know, I brought it to him, proclaimed cryptozoologist. I said, well, what would you do? And he's like, night vision and hope for the best. And I mean, he had a whole plan. I think James chimed in earlier. He's like, I want to go hunt it too. It's like, this thing causes like a legitimate, poses like a legitimate threat. Mm-hmm. And outside of having like a really strong will to physically like, you know, combat the idea of this thing. I don't really have much else to say other than that.
Yeah. Mind over matter sometimes. I mean, strong will.
Don't go up on a railroad trust, please. I'm asking you all really nicely. Don't go onto those railroad tracks. That's dangerous business.
PSA.
That's your ghost, Bob After Dark PSA. Spooky PSA.
It'd be nice to check out the area and just kind of learn more about the lore actually being there. But
oh, absolutely,
again,
and that's next time I go through Louisville, I'm actually gonna go stop at Popelik and go. I'll head down to the wooded area. I'll have a local take me, or I'll, you know, be ready for that. But I'm not going up on the railroad crossings. That's a very dangerous business. Count Panic, we have a caller on the line before we take off for the night. You want to just take him live?
Yeah, you know what?
Who do we have?
From last, he's always there at the last minute. Jack on the line.
Jack, you're on the air. You're my last to the race, last to finish.
Hey, I want to read you a one-sentence quote by the psychologist Carl Jung. He wrote, there is a thinking in primordial images and symbols which are older than the historical man, which are inborn in him from the earliest times, eternally living, outlasting all generations, still make up the groundwork of the human psyche. So the point that I'm trying to make is that the goats, the half-goat, half-man image or symbol has been seen throughout the ages. And the people of Mendes in ancient Egypt, they worshipped a Ptah, which is E-T-A-H, which is a goat-headed god. And you see that throughout mythology. And so this being is also known as a satyr, or satyr, right?
Yes.
So it's always been worshipped as a god. So I would say the best form of defense, because the satyr or the faun, it usually induces fear. And when people ask me, how do I defend myself from, you know, such and such? When it comes to the paranormal, I would say never allow yourself to give in to the fear, you know?
Absolutely.
Because that is the best, that really is the best form of defense against anything that is spiritual, whether it's ghosts or poltergeists or, you know, malevolent gods.
Absolutely. Do you think that's, in your professional opinion, Jack, do you think if the public monster was an actual physical entity, do you suppose that it's just a deity that somehow wandered over here and now hangs out in the woods of Louisville?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility that, you know, a lot of the beings that we, you know, that we once called deities, you know, weren't these all-powerful gods that we once saw them as. You know, they actually can be conquered, you know, and like I said, a way of doing that is not giving in to their will. You know, the public monster is but one of them, and actually that goat's cryptid has been seen throughout the United States.
Yep.
I actually interviewed somebody from Bowie, Maryland, a guy named Adam. He saw it while him and his friends were smoking cigarettes late one night. It was nearby railroad tracks, and he saw a silhouette under an overpass. And as soon as he saw it with horns, and he said it was burly looking, they darted for their car, and he heard the gravel kick behind them, and they knew that this thing was running after them. They quickly got into the car and sped off. He said that he didn't get a really good look at it, but he knows it was about 8 to 9 feet tall, he estimated. And I told him, well, with your distance, were you really able to, you know, get a good, you know, were you able to see the height really good? And he goes, I couldn't see the image really good, but I did see that it was horns. It had horns, and it was about 8 to 9 feet tall.
Hmm. Well, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Well, Jack, I appreciate you calling in. Now, Jack.
Yeah. Thank
because
you.
I have to. Nah, you're not getting off the hook that easy. Now you have things going on. Jack and I are friends, and we're colleagues outside of the him calling in at like literally before I'm able to call it a night.
I'm so sorry about that.
No, don't. What are you apologizing for? I take 1,000. If 1,000 more callers called in now, me and Panic are going to overtime. It's fine. So Jack, you have things that are happening. You just got interviewed for a newspaper, right?
Yeah, well, I'm submitting an article for you.
He's writing the article. Okay. Tell us about the article. Tell us where we can read that paper, because I'd like to feature it, because Jack is brilliant. He's probably one of the brilliant, most brilliant minds in the paranormal has to offer, especially Chicago. I mean, behind the beautiful yours truly. I'm joking, of course. Jack is extremely knowledgeable. So tell us about this article. Tell us about where we could read it.
Yeah, so it's going to be submitted to the Effingham newspaper, which is in Effingham, Illinois. There was a sighting in the Caspar Cemetery of a being called Crawler or Troglodyte, which are these underground dwelling beings. And I interviewed the woman who saw it, and she said it was a pale, emaciated-looking, about 6 feet tall, and it was crawling around. It was very humanoid, but it was crawling on all fours, even though it looked like it could have stood up. So, and that Caspar Cemetery also has a lot of ghost activity there as well.
Mm.
I know a couple of investigators that investigated there. So it seems like there's something going on, maybe a portal or something in Effingham, Illinois.
Now, Jack, you have a thing with these crawlers. As soon as the COVID world is safe to come in, I'm going to have you on the show because we need to talk about this book of yours. These crawlers, you haven't seen one yet in person, right?
I have not seen one, but I have interviewed several people that have witnessed it, and I have a couple more people scheduled to interview. And so it's, I'm hunting things down. I'm looking at mythology, comparing the modern sightings to ancient mythology. You know, I'm trying to find all these correlations.
Guys, can you get on it? Jack's book's coming out sometime at some point. I'm going to relentlessly pick on Jack about it. It's, I promise, completely fine. But Jack's book's coming out at some point. You guys can check that out when it comes out. I demand a autographed copy for my library. Thank you so much for calling in, Jack. I appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Take care, Jack.
Jack's a brilliant investigator, man.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because Jack is, I don't really know where he falls on the spectrum. We've had lengthy conversations about it as far as, like, you know, belief versus skepticism, but he's such a level-headed, like, investigator. It baffles me because, like, you know, some investigators are going to hype up the truth stuff a bit, mm-hmm. because, I mean, that's what's exciting. And skeptics really hype up the skeptic thing because, well, that's what they do. The level-headed folk like Jack is just, very interesting stuff. I appreciate Jake, and I appreciate him calling in.
Indeed.
Yep. All right. So, Panic, what is your take on the Poplic Monster?
It's interesting. You know, I'd like to visit the area. Maybe not, of course.
Don't go on the train tracks.
I'm not going to go on the train tracks. But, you know, half man, half goat, people talk about stuff like that. I got a question for you, Bob. This is my final take of the thing.
Absolutely.
Here. What animal would you want to be crossed with? Half Bob, half what?
A moose.
Half moose. So half moose. Bob, half moose.
Yeah, it'd be a were-moose.
I think, okay, that's pretty cool.
You know, there are, this is a story for another time, this is a little derailment, but there are Inuit tales of the moose man.
Moose man?
Yeah, it's true. It's an Inuit folklore tale.
That's a different show.
That's when we get into the winter months. And we talk a little bit more about the stuff that goes bumping the night out in the winter. But
all right.
I'd be a were-moose.
All right.
Yeah. Good question, Count Panic.
Thanks.
For when it's safe with me and you could actually, like, be next to each other when we do the unplugged stuff again.
That's a good question. All right.
So, no, what's your take? Do you think the Poplic Monster is real?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
Wow.
Because here's the thing. I mean, someone's driving people to that bridge there and those train tracks. If it was just one person, then maybe not, but these are multiple people that say they feel something when they're there. So you got to start to believe it then.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I think this one goes without saying that, you know, power suggestions are really, you know, it's an important thing. And I mean, there's levels to that. I mean, people might be dreaming and might be compelled to do it after they hear the stories. I mean, there's probably an argument to be made for that, and I'm sure there is an argument to be made for that. But man, that's something, you know. And even up to like last year, I hear stories about people that have died mm-hmm. hunting the Poplic Monster. There's definitely probably something to this, and that's why it'll always stand out to me as probably the most dangerous cryptid entity we've ever talked about on the show, man.
Until we talk about Moose Man.
Yeah. All right, Count Panic, what's your closing words for the evening?
Everybody continue to have a great week. And remember, if you're in your mind there, something's trying to lure you to something, might be best to just take a step back and think about what you're doing there.
All right, folks, thank you so much for listening and watching another episode of Bob After Dark. To my parents, I want to wish you guys sweet dreams. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I just want to wish you the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the most two important rules I could teach you on Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time, folks.
Memoriam development.